Welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. Now your hosts.
Hello and welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. I'm John Alois and I'm joined by Sean.
Hello and welcome to the Hyperion Hub.
And John Redlingshaver.
What? Well, great to be here, guys.
Well, you need to announce it like they do at the basketball games that his daughters are in, when they say, Redlingshaver.
At least they say it right. Yeah.
Well, what do you think happens when I walk in the office or a courtroom? Same announcement. It's pretty impressive, really.
Not all rise.
I don't wear a robe.
Not yet.
At least in the courtroom.
Whatever platform you're listening to us on, please rate and review so more people find the show. You can follow us on social media, and you can email us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. If you have a review, a movie review, a restaurant review, or just want to say hi, go ahead and send us a voice recorded message there.
Please, send us something.
Would someone say hi to John? He's really lonely.
We may play it on the show. Well,
are we going to play someone who goes, hi?
Yeah.
All right, Sean, you have to send one.
I'll do it.
I can't figure it out.
It's time for our Disney views.
All right. Have you guys ever been to a Disney water park?
Yes.
Which one?
Blizzard Beach.
All right. We've been to Typhoon Lagoon. Well, boy, do I have a story for you. So, Disney Resort hotel guests. Now, this is from Disney World directly. If you're a guest arriving in 2025, you can actually enjoy a water park admission on check-in day for free. This new benefit just was announced, and it's only for registered guests on the room reservation. Did you catch the key words? On check-in day. Okay. So it's a great benefit. It's easy to unwind on the day you arrive. Yeah, right. I am usually trying to unpack, and chaos ensues. But I guess they're trying, right? Should we be happy about this? It's a perk,
absolutely,
per se, right?
We should be happy with any perk. In my opinion.
It's a nice gesture, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, though, like we had talked earlier, I mean, most people are arriving, what, early to mid-afternoon?
It depends.
They're driving in or flying in.
No, but you're right, because a lot of those check-in times at 4 or later, yeah. And, you know, if you're not in a car, what are you going to do with your stuff?
How much time are you actually,
They'll store your stuff. We leave it there all the time. When we get in early, and if we're going to Disney Springs or if we're going to a park,
they'll store your luggage.
Yeah.
Now, they say again, it's only on the day of check-in, subject to availability. Boy, do they have a lot of bullet points in terms of the important information about the benefit. At this time, a park reservation is not required to visit the water park, so you don't need a park pass to go. Now, they've even announced that the water parks are subject to extended rehabilitation, seasonal capacity, and weather closures, so understand that it may be closed the day you go. An interesting tidbit also buried in this was that each of our water parks is refurbished annually. No surprise there. But these maintenance periods are staggered, so guests should be able to enjoy at least one water park experience year-round. So if everybody starts using this, how full is that water park going to be?
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody's going to be using it. Now, when you go down in December and it's 40 degrees...
They're usually cold anyway. They're usually closed anyway.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. They were both closed simultaneously, like in December, January...
It's a nice step in the right direction.
It was something nice to read. Wow.
Yeah.
They're doing something for us.
Yeah.
Bring back Magical Express.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I'll give up my water pass if I can get on a bus.
Seriously. Yep. It was a free perk. And people argue that it wasn't free. Well, have they lowered the price? No. Have they given you anything else to replace Magical Express? No. So it was free. And it's one of those things that enticed you to come down here. This is a good step in the right direction, like I said. All right, time for the second half of our conversation with composer Dave Metzger. And we're talking about Once Upon a Studio in this kind of four-part series about this amazing short. And you may remember a few weeks ago when we were talking with the creators of the short, directors Dan Abraham, Trent Corey, and producer Brad Simonson, Sean asked this question.
When Alan Adale starts playing When You Wish Upon a Star at the end, you know, we're kind of coming down emotionally, and then you hear that. And I don't know if this was intentional or not. But the last few chords of that kind of almost echo the final chords of Feed the Birds. There's some, it's like goes to like from a one to a like a flat six to a flat two before going back to the one. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it had that feel of the ending of Feed the Birds.
You know, I don't know if that's intentional either, but we had Dave Metzger was our composer and worked with our music team. And he, I mean, he's such a lovely guy. And Dave Metzger kind of, Dan and I always joked because he like embodied this short as a human being. I mean, he is just the warmest guy. And he did a great job of weaving those themes into the short and doing little callbacks, even very subtle, just a couple chords from a song you recognize, or weaving in things like the Peter Pan music and seamlessly putting it into the score. So I wouldn't be surprised if he did it on purpose.
We're working on getting him to talk to him, so I'll ask him about that.
Oh, yeah. I want to know.
And now he gets the answer from Dave Metzger. Yep.
So I need to ask, as a huge Sherman Brothers and Mary Poppins student, did you do that ending chord progression? It was very similar to the end of Feed the Birds. Yeah. It goes to flat six, flat two, back to the one, kind of wandering around. Was that intentional?
Right, listen to you. Yeah. It actually, now that you bring it up, I never had thought of it before. It would have a connection there, but that wasn't intentional. What happened is I actually originally had done a little more static ending, final chord. And then Matt Walker, who is currently the head of music at Disney Animation Studio, Matt said, you know, could you do a little bit more, you know, with the ending and make it have it go a little bit more? And so then I came back and I hope this doesn't get out anywhere. Don't play this for anybody. I'm kidding. But because I was already engaged in Wish at that point, I didn't have a whole lot of time. So I probably had about 15 minutes to come up with a little different approach to it, and including the mock-up version of it. But I was happy with the way it turned out. And you're right. It does. But I think that's kind of a part maybe of where I've listened to so much Disney over my life that it's just sort of part of my DNA a little bit.
That Disney sound.
Exactly.
It was just thrilling for us.
Is there a moment for you that stands out above all others?
On Once Upon a Studio?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it was the thrill of being able, that was the first thing I actually was the composer of not being a ghostwriter or a, so for me, it was frankly, the whole experience was beyond a dream, you know, and then to get to do that short was another beyond the dream, you know, because it just was so special to me and such a lovely work, I think, all around, you know, all that Trent and Dan did was just so great. I think I was kind of happiest with, I think it was Mickey talking to Walt. I think that was a nice emotional moment. And really, When You Wish Upon a Star, honestly, I think I did the logo arrangement of 2006, like what had been the logo for Disney Animation from 2006 until this last year when they did a new version. So When You Wish Upon a Star has always been kind of special to me anyway. And then, so to get to do that, and I'm not a great conductor. I don't conduct that much, and I'm really more efficient when I'm in the booth, the sound booth. You know, I can work a little more efficiently that way. Probably bring more to the party. But I asked my conductor Don Harper, who's a dear friend, if I could conduct that one segment. So and he was very gracious in letting me do it. So I was out on the stand, you know, conducting that segment, and that meant a lot to me, and I'm kind of an emotional guy, so I had tears going and everything, and lots of great memories from that.
And we knew that, you know, ahead of time that it was Richard Sherman on Walt's piano in the office, right, recording on a Friday afternoon, you know, so all those things just, yeah, we went from weeping to smiling and laughing and
great.
I've got a question. When you were brought into the project and you knew you were going to have to stitch together all of these themes that everyone knows, plus add originality to it. I mean, just talk about that daunting task in general, please.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want this to sound wrong or you know, like I'm very good or anything, but I honestly don't know if I was very daunted by it. Honestly, I think I've been around so long, you know, and I've been so fortunate to work quite a bit that it just looked like it, to me, it's a puzzle, right? All of my work is a puzzle. Frankly, it's a big puzzle. And this one just was maybe a 5,000 piece one instead of a 250, you know, but it was kind of the, it was a very welcome challenge. And I just knew I couldn't do it super quickly. I wanted it to be as good as it could be just to honor the film, you know, but, as I always do, but I knew I couldn't just sort of like rush through it, you know? And so I was just lucky enough to have enough time to kind of do it where I felt like I was able to give it justice and, or do it justice. And so, it's also breaking down into, instead of looking at the whole thing, like if I would have looked at the whole, what is it, 9 minutes or something, whatever long, I think I would have been a little freaked out probably. But I also sort of looked at it into chunks, into little sections. And even though I wrote it as a through piece, in one big giant sequencer file, I still looked at, I just got to get up to, you know, to Fantasia. You know, I just got to get up to these certain, I put little markers that I knew if I got there, I could kind of regroup and move forward, you know. So
you're a problem solver. I mean, you're a solution finder. Sorry, go ahead, John.
That's fine. Yeah. We've talked about our reaction when we got to see the whole thing the first time. Take us to when you sat down and got to see it start to finish. You don't have to share every sappy detail like we will or would, but I just take us there. Where did you watch it the first time, and what was it like for you?
Yeah, well, I live in Oregon, as I think I've mentioned, and so for me going to LA, you know, I have to fly in an airplane, right? You know, and so I'd flown down for a Wish meeting. We had a I can't remember if I was with Julia or if it was a big might have been a whole group. Creative meeting, but so then they just said, hey, let's get them to screen Once Upon a Studio for you down in the main theater at Disney, which is underneath the Sorcerer's Hat, hat.
Wow.
It's that theater. And so, and I said, sure, I'd love to. So I went down to the theater and it was an audience of me and I just got to sit there in the prime seat, and it's a beautiful theater sonically too. It sounds really great there. And I was just able to take it in all its glory. And again, just cried, you know, I shed tears because it was so beautiful. I was so, so happy. And it was just, again, such a unexpected joy and turn in my career, you know, to get that opportunity. So it was just a very special moment for me. Yeah,
that sounds like a cool place to watch it, not gonna lie.
Yeah, these characters mean so much to us, and so many of them came from that hallowed ground, and here you are watching this for the first time. Is it hard to watch something the first time without critiquing yourself a little bit?
You know, John, it's like in different stages of my career, I felt differently about that. You know, when I was younger, when I first started out, it was like, oh my gosh, I worked on something that's on the screen. You know, so it's like, you know, you're just sort of like, you know, freaked out by the wow, you know, factor. And then I got probably 15 years or so into it, and it was kind of, then I'd see something I'd worked on and I'd go, you know, I could have done that, you know, and that would have been better, right? But then it sort of came back full circle again for me on these two projects, of where it was just the thrill of having been able to have a chance to work on it. When I first saw them again, it was just the disbelief of it actually happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'd say now I've seen Wish, I don't know, like 30 times maybe. Yeah, yeah. And so now I'm sort of like, I'll listen to it. I'll go, you know, I probably could have done that, you know, there instead of this, you know. And so you know, you start to critique it now at this point. But at first it was just like, oh, wow, you know, I'm just so thankful.
So now that you've wrapped up and have been enjoying Wish and Once Upon a Studio, what's coming down the pike for you?
Well, that's a very good question. I have gone through, I might have mentioned, I can't remember, like the last 15 years, I've had multiple projects going on at the same time, like 3, 4, 5 projects virtually the entire 15 years. The only exception was this last year where I cleared the plate completely, mm-hmm. for for Wish, just so I could really completely focus on it.
And Wish was the first film that you were the composer for the score, correct?
That's right. Okay. Yep. And so I wanted to really make sure, I put all my 100% energy into it, or 110% or whatever, even though there's no more than 100% of anything, but I digress. Because of that, and also with the changes in the business, the industry is changing a little bit. And so studios are retrenching and reassessing, not all of them are, all studios are. So I am just enjoying the opportunity to have a little bit of time off for the first time. My wife is enjoying it. We're able to go skiing or hiking or, go on little trips and stuff that we haven't been able to for ages. And so I think she's kind of happy and I'm enjoying it. I have also had a chance to get into Dorico. so I was able to spend a couple of days there, in my off time. But the next thing I actually have that is on the books is, like I was mentioning, finishing up Snow White, the live action version of Snow White. So I think we regroup musically in probably July. And so even though I've done all the arrangements and synth orchestrations of all the songs in that film, there's going to be some edits that I'll have to chase. And there's probably a few director's notes that have happened in the year since I've worked on it. And so then I'll do that. And I believe we record... I think we're shooting to record in September.
Okay.
And so, that's kind of my next thing. And then I'm just sort of chilling and enjoying it and we'll see what happens.
So, you've mentioned going down for various meetings. So you mentioned a couple of key dates. Those are definitely in California for those, it sounds like you can do so much of your job virtually, even back to the dot matrix and the fax days. So you'll envision a lot in the coming months of your time in California, or will you still be able to have a vast majority of it there in Oregon?
Well, the way it works, probably if I had to put a percentage on it, and I'm kind of guessing here, but I would say on a film like on Wish, let's just say Wish, I probably spent 95% of my time in Oregon working on it.
Wow.
And probably 5% would have been the recording sessions and the any meetings that I had to have. It might be 7% down there, but it's really an amazing amount. But there were a lot of Zoom meetings, throughout that time. And so virtual meetings that you can do now that like on Tarzan, that being said, I still had probably 20 trips to LA last year, but like in the days of Tarzan, I would be down in LA for 10 days at a stretch because you couldn't do the remote thing as easily then. So that's changed a little bit. But again, the next couple of months, I'm chilling at home, and I think we might take a couple of trips. But when Snow White kicks up again, the majority of the work, the first couple, like month and a half, I'll probably just be able to do it all from here. And then the rest of it would be recording.
What's the best advice you've received that you maybe use on a daily basis, professionally, personally?
Wow. I would say, probably it's personally. And I think I had wonderful parents who instilled, politeness, humility, thanking people who help you, to get to places. And trying to be a positive in the world, and I think it's not specific advice, but it was kind of a lifetime of being raised. And I was very fortunate. My parents were really great role models and encouraged me, didn't know anything about music, like I said earlier, and didn't know anything about what it meant to try to be a composer, but always supported me, unconditionally. And that's probably the... that's what pops into my mind, John, about what probably impacted my life the most. And that carried over to my career. And I think that's kind of why I've probably been hired at times, because I'm, I'm probably relatively easy to work with. I'm a positive person and I try to make things better and happier.
Yeah.
Which is why I love working for Disney. Sorry. I love that I can work in these films that are hopefully bringing joy to people's lives and being positive things, instead of I've worked on movies in my career earlier, where they were maybe not quite as positive. You know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm very thankful to have that Disney connection and have been able to have done that.
My family and I sat in the theater and watched Wish, and little did I know I'd be talking to you. You shared great advice, and it was fascinating that a teacher saw something in you. No one knew that you had this in you, and she helped cultivate it and encouraged. And it's great that you shared that advice as well. So yeah, what a special person to do that for you, to help you get here.
Right. I mean, the fact that he was, I'm sorry. But yeah, the fact that he was doing college level work as a freshman shows how much, you know, love he has for it, but how much nurturing and guidance there was. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. You're so right, John. You know, without her, she performed. I think I can't remember if I said it or not, but you know, at concerts. So I had my works as a seventh grader and an eighth grader and ninth grader performed in concerts or at festivals. So I got this great feedback, right? That hardly anybody gets. So I know how lucky I was to just have fallen into her. Joyce Seiler's, and she married later as Bacheck. Joyce Seiler's Bacheck was her name, and she was a huge influence on my life. And as so many teachers are, right? I mean, like a great teacher can have such a huge impact on so many people, so many students. And so, forever indebted to her. And very true.
Well, Dave, we could sit and probably talk to you for several hours more, but we won't take up more of your time. But thank you so much. This has been a pleasure for us, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
Absolutely. I had a great time talking with you guys, and thank you for taking the time and having the interest to talk with me. I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. How can people find you online? Do you have a website that they can just learn a little bit more about you and what you're working on?
I do. I have a website. It would be davemetzgermusic.com.
Okay.
And that's probably the best place to go. It's not the greatest website in the world, but there's some pictures and some maybe some things of interest, and that's where I would go. I'm not a big social media presence, so I know I need to probably do that someday, but the website's the best way to go.
All right, great. Well, thank you again.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Well, that was exciting for me. Thank you guys for putting up with my dominating the field on the questions.
Well, first off, we appreciate you having him explain what all is entailed with that. I can see the credits and I can read the words, but I don't know what they do. So I appreciate you letting us kind of just piggyback off of your very... professional and technical questions while I just kind of stammered my way through it. He was a blast. He was an absolute joy to talk to.
I love how versatile he is.
Correct.
He's worked in so many different corners of entertainment, and he really was able to express how he's able to jump around so much in different venues and different arenas of music.
But with a good overall message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And there's the whole, you know, the idea that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but he has kept up with all the technology and been able to, I mean, that's why he's continuing to thrive, because he's kept up to date with all those changes.
Yeah, modernized, but yet with a very simple message from his parents mm-hmm. of being kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go figure. And here he is working with Disney and
had us and you know, absolutely mesmerized and hanging on every word within 30 seconds of him joining us.
You know, it's kind to follow us on social media, which you can do.
Nice segue there.
You can also send us
it's what the script
a very
says.
Nice email once in a while as well. We would like to read it from you. Please, wherever you're listening to us, oh, by the way, our email address is podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Wherever you're listening to us, please like and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you're following us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It really does help more people find the show. Till next week, have a great one, everybody.
We're glad you could join us. We'd love to hear from you. You can email or send us a recorded audio message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Find us on social media. The Hyperion Hub is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or its subsidiaries. We'll meet you next time at the Hyperion Hub.